Okay.
Welcome to Conversations with Catalysts. I'm your host, Jeremy West, and today is a special episode. Basically, I'm just going to have a chat with my coach, Alyssa Freeman. And every time we have a chat, I say, oh man, we should have recorded that and put it up as a podcast. So we're recording it. And if you're listening to it, it means I thought it was an interesting enough conversation to share with the world. If you're not listening, that's because I haven't published it. So you can't hear me saying this. Anyway, so this is a conversation between me and a very much a catalyst in my life, Alyssa Freeman. Alyssa, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeremy. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And yes, I agree. It's going to be a great conversation, as it always is when we start chatting.
We haven't planned anything. We're just gonna
No.
just so what's tell me about what you are doing coaching wise at the moment.
Coaching wise, I'm really working with a lot of people in a group setting now, because the thing is that it makes it so much more inclusive. I really like the group work because it means that the students of the group can actually help each other, support each other, work with each other as well, and they can learn the skills and tools to help others. Because it got to the point in with my coaching is that for one-on-one, I can only help so many people in a week. And it frustrated me, to be perfectly honest, because here's all this good stuff and want to do more. So the only way really to do more was to help other people to help others. The way that I've been helping people one-on-one, they can go out and start helping other people, and it can ripple out. And that got me really excited. So I put together a group program, and that's exactly what's been happening. The participants have been working with each other and helping friends and family and their clients with the tools that I teach. And I'm really, really excited about that, because it's really time for me to, I guess, not just work with a small group. It's to get the information out, get the change happening, and really make the world a better place because of that. So
Cool. So how are you finding the new clients that come into the program?
the way, oh, how do I find new clients? Well, I've been doing this a really long time, so a lot of them come from referrals or people who have worked with me in the past come back. That's happened quite a few times. And also to some people see find me on social media or at an event that I run. So I sometimes run a seminar online with different topics, and they'll find me through there. So that's generally how people find me, but they can also go to my website and send me a message if they want, which we'll get the details of that at the end if you like.
But I was more just kind of obviously, yeah, you're getting referrals and people are coming to you, but I was more looking to find out about the sort of thing you're doing with where you mentioned doing online workshops or whatever. Like, so what are you, I know you've been doing this long enough that you don't have to do as much marketing from your end, but yeah, I'd like to hear a bit more about what you're doing proactively to find clients.
Marketing is far more important than what people give credit to it. It's one of those things that is just a fact of life when you've got any form of business, is that marketing is important. And it's a really beautiful thing, because if I can detour here, is that I had a real issue with marketing. I found it really challenging. I just wanted to do the work. I just wanted to help people, and that was it. Marketing stuff was getting in the way. It was stuff I had to do when I really just wanted to help people. So I had a real block myself around marketing. And funny thing is that I noticed a lot of people have a similar block around marketing and not necessarily comfortable with it, don't really like putting themselves out there, or it's just tasks they've got to do, a bit like taxes. I don't really want to do it, but you got to do it. And it wasn't until I actually used my own tools on myself to work out what that block was about, why that was restricting me, and how to move forward from it. And I was able to clear that. And then marketing became a beautiful thing for me because it meant that I could reach people that would never have found out about me otherwise. Pain and suffering and struggling and have challenges and have no, don't know where to go and don't know what to do. Or they've tried different things and they haven't worked. That just really, it hurts me to think that people are suffering like that. So the marketing was a really, ended up being flipped in my mind about a way that I could actually help more people. And once I realized I was able to help more people, it became much easier. So regardless of where you are in your business, marketing is something that must be done. If anyone listening out there has a business like this or any kind of business and is struggling with the marketing, struggling emotionally with the marketing and not wanting to do it, and this is a drag, then definitely that's a block that needs to be worked on for sure. Because the thing is that there's lots of reasons why someone might hold back from marketing themselves, all sorts of fears or blocks or whatever they might have, or it might be something that, you know, someone said to them when they were young that just ends up stopping them. But I think that the marketing aspect of a business like I have, it doesn't really work without it. Yeah, you can get some referrals, but you've also got to reach other people too. It's a really important thing.
Yeah, but so tell me what you do for marketing these days.
These days for marketing, I put on free seminars online or in person. So, you know, like a live event, which I'm doing one shortly next week. I'm doing one in Canberra on stress. It sold out 3 weeks before 3 weeks ago.
I'll try to get this published before then, but sold out anyway.
So they're on a waiting list. People are on a waiting list now. So there'll be some people who won't come, and those people on the waiting list will get those spots. So that's really good news. And I get asked now by other people who see what I've done and say, can you come and do a live talk here? Or I've got another one in Brisbane coming up in January on confidence and self-worth. Yes, and then they just happen because I'm putting these events on free. Now, it's a thing you may have heard of called freemium. It's a process, you know, it's really the process that Google use and Facebook use, Zoom use. They use this where there's a free value that they give, good value. And then if you want to take anything further, there's a paid option.
Yeah.
So this is the method that, and you'll see many people using this form of marketing. I didn't invent it. It's just a really good idea because it means that people can come along without worrying about that financial commitment and dip their toe in and see, is this the right person for me, or is this the right company for me, or is this the right program for me? And they can test it out without any cost to them, just their time. And in those freemium events, I give enormous value. So I just jam-pack it with amazing stuff. And really what I want to do is I want to wow you guys. I want you guys to go, oh, my goodness, yeah, there's a path forward for me. And whether or not people sign up to a paid program of mine, they still get value. I can still go away and go, yeah, I learned some really, really cool stuff that isn't available anywhere else. And those people who feel like they want to take the journey further, then they can. So it's a really great model, and it means that it really does get your name out there if you do this form of marketing. And it's fun. You get to help people you would normally have never met, never come across in any way. So it's, yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm doing currently what could be considered marketing by doing this podcast. And also I've got a daily mindfulness lesson podcast called It's Now Again. And then also a companion to that, which is a podcast called It's Now Again. It's Now Again guided meditations. And the way I feel about it is that I'm not even sure, maybe marketing might have been the reason that I did them in the first place, but now I'm just enjoying doing them for the sake of doing them and getting these, putting, you know, these this daily lesson out on It's Now Again, the podcast. And my goal is, I think I'm at about episode 70 or 80 right now, but I want to get up at least 365. And that way people can see it as their daily lesson for the year and then repeat it the next year if they want to. And even if I never get a single client from doing that, it's still a success. Even if it doesn't blow up and there's, even if it doesn't blow up to millions of listeners or thousands of listeners or hundreds of listeners, even if 10 people are using it, then there's 10 people that I'm helping for free. And then it's just a bonus if any of those people became, you know, paid clients. So that, I guess I'm just saying, like you said, about flipping that on its head about marketing, you can use content marketing to get the word out, and it can be all about helping as many people as possible. And then it, you know, will likely lead, as it has with you, to paid clients.
Yes, I think the times have changed, and people, you know, don't respond to the same form of sales or marketing that they did in the past. And they see through the BS.
Yeah.
They're savvy. People are savvy about this stuff. And, you know, the old foot in the door, the kind of sleazy sales methods that were used in the past were exactly that. I'm not going to, you know, pull any punches there. So I really like a model that is honest and upfront, and a model that, yeah, you know, this is, you know, yeah, I am going to offer something to people and they can take it or not. The thing is that even though my goal is to, and you might share this too, Jeremy, that is to help as many people as possible in the world, I've got to want it.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, you can't force people, and I wouldn't want to.
No.
They want to do it, and they need to be ready to do it. And so I think that option, when you've got an event, or like, you know, you put an event or you put out your meditation or whatever you're doing, Jeremy, when we put these things out there for the broader audience, is that, yeah, it's going to be a whole bunch of those people who just listen and go, that was nice, and, you know, go about their day. And there's going to be other
people
that respond and just go, oh, yeah, I want more of this.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, some of those people, like some of the people may be further along and all they need is the stuff that I'm putting out there for free. And that's great. They can use that. Mm. And then I'm helping them. But yeah, other people need more help and guidance, and they'll be the people that come as clients. But yeah, I guess my whole point is that I like this model of marketing because you're helping people, even the ones that aren't paying. And so it just feels good. And yeah, especially with this, you know, recording podcasts and whatever, like it'll be out there forever to help people forever, years from now, when I'm on to something new or whatever, people can still get the help that I've put out there. So
amazing though how, you know, you don't actually know what the effect of that will be, because you could find in 10 years time someone just stumbles on that and contacts you. And I've had that happen where, you know, someone says to me, I really want to talk to you about that thing that you did, and I'm like, wow, that was years ago. It took them that long to either find it or connect in some way, maybe energetically there's a connection there, or they were just sitting with that for that amount of time. I don't know but how they did that, but they were ready at that point. And yeah, and there builds a momentum. And I see a lot of people who are in our industry of personal development, personal growth, that they'll you know, become a coach, or they'll become a therapist, or they'll start doing these things and give themselves a few months. And when there's no traction, they stop. I've seen so many times. I've seen, you know, there is academies or places that are filled with students learning to be coaches and such. And I'm not really sure of the statistics, but there's not very many of them that are doing it 10 years later, 15. Yeah. Because they don't really give it the time to get that momentum going.
Yeah.
And it takes time. I mean, fair enough if they go, oh, actually, I did this and it's not really my thing. Great, don't do it. Go do your thing. Everyone should go do their thing, that's for sure. But if it's your thing and, you know, the cash flow hasn't started yet, that's pretty normal because it takes a while. It takes a while for that momentum to build, for you to get your presence known, for that trust to build.
Yeah. So you were telling me recently, sometime maybe last year, I don't know when, but about leaning into your sort of shamanic practices. Is that what the current program that you're running is?
So the free ones?
No, the paid program that you do, the breakthrough program that you do right now, is that your shamanic practices, or is that something that's still coming?
Well, so just to backtrack there, the shamanic practice has been a big part of my life since when I was little. Mm. It actually started when I was little. And it's been a very private thing for me for a really long time. I kept that private. I actually was a little bit, to be perfectly honest, I was a little bit scared to actually put it out there. And the reason that I was a little bit scared was because a couple of things. One thing happened was my mother was a psychic, and she started doing psychic readings from when she was a little girl. So she was taught by an Irish gypsy, as they like to be called, by the way, if anyone gets upset about the word gypsy.
Oh, they like
it? Yeah, they actually call themselves gypsies.
Sorry, just a total aside. I'm 1/16th Native American, which is the politically correct term. But from what I've read, the Native American people prefer to be called by their own tribe name. But if you're going to collectivize them, they prefer American Indian to Native American, even though the white people have said that Indian is the wrong term and you have to say Native American.
Yeah,
so that's interesting right. So, to hear that gypsies have to be called gypsies.
I'm really happy to be corrected, but this is from what I found out, and she certainly called herself a gypsy to my mother and taught her to read tea leaves. And she would play around with this. She saw something in my mother, even though she wasn't a relative, and saw that she had something and taught her. And my mother, by the time I came along, she was doing readings for people. And we had a little tiny fibro house in Noosa by the beach, tiny little two-bedroom house with all of us living in there. We were poor as anything. And she would do these readings for people for some money. She'd do it for money. And it was a little bit of supplement to the small income that we had. My parents were on a pension. They're on welfare because my father was an invalid and my mother looked after him. So she would do these readings and they were profound. They were mind-blowing because she had this incredible intuition. But back when she was doing that, up until recently, until the 80s actually, doing teacup readings in Australia was illegal. In fact, you could go to jail for it. So in my upbringing, my mother, anything like that type of thing, she would say, don't tell anyone. You don't want anyone to know. And if someone would ring up and she'd have this old phone that was connected to the wall with a curly handset, and it would ring and she'd pick it up and someone would ask for a reading and she'd have to check who they were, that they weren't someone.
You're not police, are you? You have to tell me if you're police.
She'd say, who gave you the number? Who told you? And if it was someone that she knew well, she'd say, okay, you can come by tomorrow, 2 o'clock, and have your reading. And they'd have a cup of tea, and she'd pour the tea, and the people would hold the tea, and they'd sit there in her presence, and they'd have a little chat. And then they'd drain all the tea out of the tea leaves and then pass the teacup to her. And Mum would do these amazing readings that were absolutely bang on. Things like, there was one stranger that came and she saw in the tea leaves, she saw that there was an old woman surrounded by water with all these animals and she was in danger. She didn't know anything about this person. And she said, there's this old woman and needs help right now. There's water all around, the water's rising. And you know, we're in the middle of Australia. There was a drought on at the time, so it seemed really bizarre. But I was there. I was actually sitting there and I used to listen in because I loved this stuff and I still do. And she said these things and he just went gray. And then he said, my mother is on a farm with all these animals on her own. And he said, I can't stop thinking about her right now. And my mother said, you need to take action on that immediately. So this was before we had mobile phones or anything like that. So he contacted authorities in the area and said, can you go and check on my mother? Found out that there's been flooding in the area. And they sent a helicopter in and actually saved her. So this is the kind of things that my mother was doing, but it was all secret and hush, hush. Don't talk about that stuff. Anything that's a bit woo woo, you could be jailed. So that was layered into my belief system. That was actually deeply ingrained in me from a very early age. Don't say you do this stuff because you could be in trouble. There was danger associated. And that was very powerful for me. So it was really hard for me to admit really that what I was doing wasn't all the science side of it, which, you know, and the brain's a really important thing. And I love all that stuff. I love all the fact. I love the neuroscience. I study that and love it to bits. And there was this whole other side of me, which was in the shamanic practice, which is really, for me, it's not associated with any particular culture. It's more global. So I do my own practice, which comes from me. And a lot of that is around symbols. And so now I've started to incorporate that into more and more into my work, whereas, you know, I've released the terror and my fears of the dangers being alternative spiritual person and being out there. So now it's all out there. And you know, of course, I had to heal that first, and then I started putting myself out there. And now people are really curious and interested, and it's definitely helped my work with other people because I can say to them, this is based in shamanism. In fact, all modern psychology is based on shamanism. All hypnosis and hypnotherapy is based on shamanism. That's where it all began. But then it became very separated and we forget the roots of it. So, yes, I do incorporate shamanism in a lot of my work now. And you brought up another program. Yes, I have been asked a number of times to do deeper work, a second level to the one that I'm doing now, the breakthrough. And that it takes me about a year of solid work to put together a program that people can do in about 3 or 6 months. The big, very, very beginnings of that have begun, which is just to put down my first ideas. So, yes, that is coming.
So that's
a very, very long answer to your question.
So you wouldn't say, I mean, you're kind of, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, you know, you're saying that modern psychology and therefore the stuff that we do in coaching as well is, you know, comes from shamanism, but you haven't directly put that into the breakthrough program that I'm a part of right now, but you are working on something where it is more obviously the shamanism stuff.
Yes, and deeper. Really, I was surprised at how much interest that got. So I thought, okay, well, yeah, great. Pass that knowledge on. So yes, it's going to be deeper work, and yeah, more obviously shamanic.
Interesting. See, now I'm as a mindfulness coach, I guess I consider myself a secular Buddhist, or as one author's title of his book puts it, Buddhism without beliefs. So I follow Buddhist practices, but without having necessarily a belief in, reincarnation. Although I do, from a scientific point of view, I believe in reincarnation, because just not from a spiritual point of view, because every one of our cells and every one of our atoms is going to be in something else after we die. Likely something, or a lot of them will be in something living. So physically, we will be living on. But anyway, my point is, I like to think modern psychology comes from Buddhism. But
Well, in really, Sha is a very, very, very broad name.
I mean, would you say Buddha was a shaman?
Well, some people could say that. Yeah, some people would put that all under that category. Any person who is spiritually minded,
So maybe even Jesus and Muhammad and all the,
people have actually, yes, they've suggested that.
I
And
would suggest a lot of those thought
I'm open to that as well, to go, okay, and some people like to separate it, and I'm okay with that too.
I feel like Buddha was so in psych, when I took my psychology course, we kind of learned that psychology branched off from philosophy. So there was philosophy that was all about just thinking and thinking about thinking, and then they started studying it more scientifically, and then that branched off. Psych philosophy went one way and psychology went the other way. And now the funny thing is, a lot of people consider the first psychologist Freud, and most people within psychology now think of Freud as a bit of a fraud, but philosophers love him apparently. So, but I think that the first scientific psychologist that we know of was Buddha, because he was teaching these mindfulness practices that work on psychology and work on depression and anxiety, and really learning to live with the fact that suffering exists in this world, and not adding a second layer of suffering by resisting what is. But why I call him scientific is because he said, don't just take my word for any of this. Test it out for yourself. And even after you've tested it and it's worked, keep on testing it. And if something else works better for you, then do that instead. Like, so I feel like, and that's what science is all about, is testing and refining
Testing and measuring, yeah. Wow, yeah, I think that certainly some of the Buddha principles becoming more and more mainstream now, and I think that's wonderful. Anything, it doesn't, for me, it doesn't really matter where it comes from so much, is anything that was going to help a person to get into a better place. And certainly the work around breath and mindfulness, being present, is really, really good, juicy stuff. It's, seems so simple though, doesn't it?
It sounds simple, then just try
Yeah,
it.
exactly. But yeah, certainly using the breath is a great way. Would you agree, Jeremy, for to being present?
I often say that it is simple and it isn't. And so it sounds simple, number one. And then number two, it actually is simple. You notice that you're distracted and you bring your attention back to your breath. The only thing that isn't simple is keeping yourself present. But every time you notice that you're not, it is simple to bring yourself back. It's just noticing that you're not that's the part that's not simple.
That's right. And it's not something to give up on though, because every moment that you go back to that present, you're in a better place.
And that's
I remember seeing an
yeah,
interview
sorry.
with a Buddhist, and I wish I had kept the reference for it. No, sadly I don't. But they had been you know, became a monk at 4 years old or something like that. And they're an old man by this point. And they were asked about, you know, must be wonderful when they meditate to be able to just focus all the time on their breath. And they thought it was hilarious and laughed and said, no, I'm constantly bringing myself back to it. Because the mind's like a monkey. So even someone who's been doing it for probably 80 years.
And started when they're a child, which it's easier to learn these things as a child.
They're still having to go, oh, I've wandered off there. Come back to come back to the moment.
But that's what people often, you talk to people who say, oh, I can't meditate because I can't quiet my mind. And it's like, wait a minute. Do you ever notice that you are not in the moment? Yeah. Well, then you've succeeded. So it's not about, we have over 50,000 thoughts a day. You can't swat all of those thoughts away and control all of that. They just come automatically. It's just about noticing. And then when you have noticed that your mind has wandered, you bring it back, and that's a success.
Yeah, that's right. It's the bringing of it back rather than the doing of it, I think. It's the reminder of coming back that's the important part. And if you have to do that in 5 minutes, 100 times, it's...
That's 100 successes.
Yeah, exactly. It's 100 successes. I love that. And also, do you know the past and the future, there's still an important place for them. We learn a lot from the past. And it's really important to have some goals for the future, but living in the past or living in the future is problematic, really. So, you know, I think they have a role, but when the past or the future owns you, so fear of the future, worries about the past, if they own you, then you're trapped in there and that's not a good place to be. It doesn't feel good. It feels awful.
Yeah.
And when we bring ourselves back to the very moment, then that future and that past cease to exist in that moment.
Yeah, and the future and the past is a big storm. And when you come back to the present moment, you're in the eye of the storm, where in this moment, there is seldom a problem.
Seldom.
Yeah. The problems are usually in the past and the future. Yeah. But we're constantly bringing, by focusing on the past and the future, we're bringing those problems into the present moment.
That's right.
I look at goals for the future as simply setting that direction, so I know what to do in the present. So I definitely make goals and plans, but then I step back from them and stop. It's like seeing a big semi-trailer a kilometer ahead or 2 kilometers ahead when you're driving, and you have to think, okay, well, what if I get to that, I need to do something, but then I need to bring my attention back to what's happening right here, where I'm driving right here.
That's a great way to put it. I love that.
Yeah.
Because you'd be a terrible driver if you're completely in the moment all the time, because you wouldn't plan your direction. You wouldn't think, oh, that person's indicating they're going to change lanes soon.
Yeah,
which is important. There was an interview.
But if I keep focusing on what that thing that I can see a couple of kilometers a couple of kilometers ahead, and then I won't notice that someone right in front of me is turning, and I need to slow down. What were you going to say? Sorry.
There was an interview. An interview was a conversation actually, and I think it was a long time ago. I think it was between Deepak Chopra and Dr. Wayne Dwyer when he was alive, and they were having I think it was those two, and they were having a conversation about being in present moment. I think you probably know this one.
I think the last time we had a conversation, and I said, "Oh, we should have recorded that." You told me this. Please tell it to me now.
Love it. And I honestly tell it as much as possible because it's a little bit funny too. And they were talking about being in the present moment, how important it was. And then they were saying, but the past and the future have these important roles. And they realized that if they didn't use the past and the present, then they would urinate on themselves. They'd wet themselves because to go to the bathroom to relieve yourself requires the past. Okay, that's where I go. The memories of the past, that's where the bathroom is, and that's where I go, and this is how I control my bladder until I get there. That's all past. And in the future, it's about being able to feel much more comfortable and not having to clean up any spilled all over your furniture or in the car or wherever you are. So you have to have those to actually get yourself to the bathroom and make your life a lot easier for yourself by doing so. So they have these important roles, but I mean,
even to stand up and walk to the bathroom, you have made a plan. So you have to stand up and start working toward that plan. So that's what I think of.
You've had to remember how to walk.
Yeah. So that's the past again, but yeah. Future. I'm saying in the future, in 30 seconds, I want to be in the bathroom. Well, if that's the case, then what do I need to do right now? I need to stand up. I need to take a step. And so, definitely those plans tell us what to do in the moment.
Yes. The problem occurs, would you agree, Jeremy, is when the past is filled with old trauma that changes the way we behave, or the future has full of fears that stop us going for what we want.
Yeah. And also when we put so much of our thought into the past and the future that we're not paying any attention to what's happening in the current moment. But yeah, with the past as well, not just those traumas, but also regrets, which are based on imagining that if we had done something different, then everything would have gone perfectly in that other direction, as if we still wouldn't have had challenges and struggles.
Sliding so we go, doors, isn't it? Sliding
yeah,
doors.
I know that the way that it went got me to here. But I have no idea. I'm imagining some perfect scenario if I had done something else, which is what I just said. I don't know why I said it twice.
I think you said it twice because probably we all need to hear it twice. But yeah, you're right. It just depends on how you're using your past and how you're using your future thoughts, whether they're serving you or whether they're not. But even keeping yourself in that present moment as much as possible, particularly when you've got something challenging going on, concerns for the future, worries about the past or regrets about the past, like you said, they're perfect opportunities to focus on right now. And I love using breath. You're the mindfulness coach, so you know more about this, but you can use all sorts of things to
keep I don't know if that's true.
In the present moment. I love breath the most because it's always there. Yeah. And breath is linked to our brains. So, you know, our brains respond. If we start breathing fast and hard, our brain starts to think there might be some problem. And if we breathe slow and long and deep, our brain starts to realize that actually, oh, maybe we're okay.
Yeah.
So there's like this constant link between them two. So, you know, even ambulance officers, you'll see them using this all the time. They use breath all the time when people are panicking or freaking out. Hey, breathe with me, they'll say, breathe with me. And so it's very mainstream now, and it works.
Yeah.
Works in crisis when our brain's freaking out, and it tells our brain when we're breathing nice and long and slow like that and thinking about our breath, the brain says, oh, if we're breathing like this, we must be okay. And it starts to calm. The nervous system starts to calm down. That's, you know, it's very, very powerful like that. So they're very closely linked. So, you know, that's why there's so much emphasis on breath in so many processes that we do for healing.
That makes me think about when you talk about, you know, when you slow down your breath, your brain goes, oh, okay, maybe everything's okay. Makes me think about something I learned. I'm pretty sure I learned this both in my psychology degree and it came up in improv, which we've both done.
a bit of, and that I was taught in improv that if you improv theater where you create scenes out of nothing without having a script, and you just create it together on stage with the other actor, that if you don't have an idea for what to do, just embody the character. So if you're, you know, if you want to be a submissive character, you make yourself small, and if you want to be a aggressive character, you make yourself big or whatever, and it just then your mood shifts and the lines just start coming to you as you've embodied it. It just happens. So what I was getting at it with this is that in pretty much all of my guided meditations now, I have added something that you do at the end of, I guess, their sort of meditation / hypnosis. Your processes, you always say, put a great big smile on your face and open your eyes. And I do that because it is the case, even just putting a smile on your face sends a signal to your brain, I'm happy.
That we're happy and then we smile, but actually we smile and then we're happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I do remember the years ago, though, it was very popular, was these laughing clubs. Do you remember them?
Yeah. Yeah. Laughter yoga.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, even though it's initially fake and you go, yeah, oh, I'm doing the fake laugh, you don't feel it. You've been dragged out of bed, whatever. You haven't had your morning coffee. Last thing you feel like doing is laughing, and you go to your laughing yoga, and then you start laughing, and it's just really, I've been to them and I think they're fascinating. I'm actually really sorry that they're not so popular anymore, but all of a sudden it starts to get a little bit funny.
Yeah.
And then someone has a funnier laugh and you think, gosh, they're laughing at anything. And before you know it, everyone is genuinely holding their sides, cracking up, and no one knows what for. And that's, you know, great, because it releases all these wonderful hormones and chemicals in your brain that make you feel good, alleviate depression, do all these. It does amazing things just by being with a group of people and faking it to begin with.
And you've even done a process with me where you laugh at rejection for 10 minutes.
Yeah. And then you end up thinking, wow, that was so funny.
And yeah. then every time someone says no, it gives you that feeling of joy.
Yeah. Instead of crushing you. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a great one, that one. I think that same with smiling, though, the same thing is that, you know, often there's a process we use in hypnosis, because I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, and one of the things we learned was to anchor in laughter to our bodies anytime that we could. And I can teach everyone this right now.
I'll be your client.
Which is a really fabulous method to anchor in that sensations you get from laughter, not the laughter itself, but the good feelings, the right chemicals and hormones to make you feel good and lift your mood. And that is that you'd use part of your body, and you can choose that to be any part of your body, to touch. And you will anchor that feeling into that part of the body. And you use a part of your body you don't touch. So it's a more unusual part. So if you tend to play with your earlobes a lot, don't use your earlobes. I use the skin, the little chicken skin on the corner of my elbow, that funny little skin right on the elbow. Yeah, I use that one because it's not something that I touch a lot. Or some people do a double click of their fingers, because it's not usually what they do. They might click one finger, but they don't click two. That's another good one. Yeah. So anchoring it into a part of your body, which means is that it associates. It's a little bit like Pavlov's dog. We're using association. Hypnotherapy uses a lot of associations that are strategic. And so what you do to anchor this in is that anytime you laugh out loud, anytime you think something is funny, and some people are not big laughers, sometimes there's just a little ha 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 and that's a big laugh for them, and some people do the big belly laughs, all is good. But when you laugh, you know, a big laugh for you do the action, which might say, so that one's actually anchored into me, so I'm having trouble laughing now because I've been
I thought you used your elbow.
I do, I have that one as well.
But you do the clicking of
Yeah, because it's actually an
the
easy
link of that
one
one too.
to teach people to, because yeah, so we'll use the clicking one for now, but you can, you know, if you do click your fingers a lot, both together, then choose a different part of your body to touch or do. And what happens is that every time you do those big laughs, when you laugh out loud, like it's really funny, you do the action and you do it straight away at the time you're laughing. And what happens after a while, a bit like Pavlov's dogs, is that you'll find you'll be laughing at something, you click your fingers and you'll laugh harder. And then you click more. Tears might be streaming down your face. You're clicking your fingers. And that means that it's anchored. So it means that when you really need to lift your spirits, when things are pretty glum or you're having a bad day or feeling a bit down, and you do the action, you click your fingers, you'll find it almost impossible not to laugh, or at least to have those chemicals, those hormones released.
Wow.
It does take some layering in, so it takes some practice, but I spent probably a good year of every time I laughed hard, putting these different anchors into my body that I could use. The reason why I also use the little flappy skin on my elbow bone, as well as the clicking of the fingers. You only need one though. I just like me, I like to do everything big. Is because I could be in a meeting, sitting at a desk and needing to lift the mood, or I'm not getting very good news, but I can't go ahead and start clicking my fingers because that wouldn't be appropriate. I can just sit there and squeeze that skin on my elbow. I just did it. So with no one seeing me do it. And all of a sudden
they'll see you start laughing now.
Start laughing or smile. Certainly you wouldn't use that if it's inappropriate. Someone's giving you some very, very bad news and someone's passed or something like that. You don't want to burst out laughing. But, you know, maybe you've offered your services to the CEO and they've said no. Then you can squeeze that skin on your chicken skin on your elbow and you start to smile. You might even have a little chuckle.
And they say, what are you laughing at? And you say, you've just made the biggest mistake of your life.
And those feelings rushing through your body alleviate and don't allow those feelings of, oh no, I've been rejected and I'm sad. So it's another little hack that the listeners here can actually start to use. Now, it'll take.
And I will too.
It will take time to start to anchor those things in, which means you could start right away. But, you know, we don't always laugh every day hard, but try and remember it. And if you spend a year anchoring that in, that's locked in. That's absolutely locked in for good. But any other time after that, you can top it up. Any time that you're laughing hard.
I've just finished binging a TV series on Netflix called The Good Place.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
Okay, so if you want to anchor this, just start binging, just start watching that every day. And when you laugh out loud, then you can anchor in these things.
Anything that you think is hilarious, you know, any even the TikToks, the funny TikToks that make you laugh out loud, or when you've got some friends around and you're playing games or you're having dinner with them and you're laughing, that's the time. Yeah, click your fingers if that's appropriate, or the skin on your elbow is a good subtle one. Choose one.
Well, you can teach when your friends ask why you're clicking your fingers, you can teach it to them.
That's right. The more the merrier, honestly, the more joy in the world, the better the world will be. So hopefully you guys can, whoever's listening here, can start to layer that in to be able to take control of the good feel chemicals. Natural, I mean, we've got this natural pharmacy in our brain that it's the only reason why drugs work, because all they do is trigger our natural ability to release these chemicals. So anytime that you want to use that, your natural pharmacy to have an upper and to feel good authentically and naturally, you can do that.
You don't have to buy drugs. Just squeeze your elbow.
Let's click.
Now, I could talk to you all day, but my battery is going flat and I know you have other things. So can you share with listeners how they can find you?
Find me on my website, ElissaFreeman.com. freelissa.com.au. So that's spelled ELISSA Freeman. And yes, there's a contact there. There's some of my free events on there. So you can always register yourself for one of the free events that's on there. It's actually right now is in development with my IT person. So hopefully by the time, Jeremy, that you have released this, the free events links are working by then. They should be. So you can register. It doesn't matter where you are in the world because it's on Zoom. You can log in. You
might have to get up at 3 a.m, but
yeah, be good for the people on the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
I try and make the time suitable for lots of places in the world, but you can't.
Yeah. You
can't for everything. Yeah.
If it's a great time for both Australia and America, then it's not a very good time for England, is what I've found.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But the thing is that I found that with these events, I know you got to know, but you may find this too, is that you have people that will get up at 3 a.m.
Yeah, 100%.
Because they go, this is valuable. And they understand that it's important. And actually, it's nice and
cool. One of their problems is insomnia anyway. So they're already up.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
We're like, oh, that's when we're like an overnight infomercial.
Yes, that's right. And also you get no distractions.
A little bit better.
Going off, you're not getting messages. It's actually a really beautiful, peaceful time to let some learnings in and change your life.
So say that website address again.
alissafreeman.com.au.
All right. And you can find me anytime at jeremywest.net and find the podcast, this podcast Conversations with Catalysts, as well as It's Now Again, your daily mindfulness training sessions and the It's Now Again guided meditations. Thank you, Alissa, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Talk to you soon.